And I think it was the 1st of June.
Accession number 28736, reel number 2.
That was the sort of very last day that their ships were coming out of there. And I went over, and I remember they gave me a cup of tea, and that was all I had, and another shot of morphine. I had frequent shots of morphine, which were I got a bit addicted to, I think, over those 4 days, and very nice too. But we went over, and lovely smooth crossing, and then I saw the cliffs of Dover, and we went to Dover, and then there was another one of these commanders, full commander, on the end of the pier there, and he said, "Sorry." I heard him shout this out to our ship. "You'll have to go along, try somewhere else, try New Haven." And so we just turned and slowly slogged our way along to New Haven. And that's where I was brought ashore. And they had a train waiting, and I was carried up there and put on the train, and got out at Staines station, and there was a Green Line bus that had been converted, and to take stretchers, and we were put on there, and we went to Staines Emergency Hospital, which consisted of a row of 10 or 12 long huts, which held about 30 people each. And I was taken in there and had a gorgeous bed with sheets, and I was put in one of those and generally pampered after that. And that was a very nice, comforting thing. And that was still the tail end of the 1st of June, I should think. I had, Wally had given me his things for safekeeping, which is rather funny, and his watch was there, and which Kit had given to him, All My Love, Kit, on the back of it. Unfortunately, my things and pay book and so on were handed over to some military personnel at the end, and I never saw Kit's watch again. So, yes. I wasn't talking hardly at all, if at all. And they were a bit concerned about me. And Nobby Clark, who was in the next bed to me and was a leading stoker on a destroyer at Dunkirk, and he was very badly burned. And then there was Lipscomb, who was in the infantry, I think, and was badly wounded in kidney-wise, was his trouble. He was a very humorous chap, very funny. He's full of stories and little jokes, and then he'd go very quiet. Lipscomb died shortly afterwards, so it's all very sad.
Yes.
Anyway, I didn't have any visitors because nobody knew I was there. and the other people had various visitors, so they saw me sort of all alone. And they came over to start a conversation, which I wasn't really able to keep up at all. And one of them gave me an orange, and they said they came from Catford. And so I got a bit excited here, and I had been provided by the hospital with a pad of paper and a pencil so I could tell them what I wanted. And so I gave her mum's address. And she went across and saw them. And by this time, Meg and Auntie Dole and Uncle George were living in an apartment and downstairs, and Mum and Theo and Grandfather were living in the upstairs apartment. So they were still all together in a very solid little family group, I should think. It got very ugly there as far as bombing's concerned later on. Later on that year.
And so did they come and see you?
So, yes. And I saw a few people after that. And it didn't matter. I got better. I got to be able to talk. And quite some long time afterwards, they didn't know what to do for me. And I was really running down pretty much. I was nearly pegging out, actually. And a specialist came. See, I had two young doctors. Really, they were just out of their training, and not very much, but they were lovely chaps, and used to spend a lot of time with me doing things around, but couldn't do anything for me. And then a specialist arrived, very dressed up and so forth, and he came at my chest with a tremendous confidence, and he tapped it all and heard this all and looked at the x-rays, of which I had a great many, and he drew off the fluid from the chest, and I began to get better. He said, "I don't think I'll be able to get to see you again, but you'll pick up," and I did. I mentioned Nobby Clark. He was a leading stoker on a destroyer over at Dunkirk, and he'd just come up from the engine room for a breather, 5 minutes off, on the deck. And almost at once, a bomb hit the foredeck of the destroyer, and they carried as much fuel as they could in their tanks, but they also carried drums of diesel for topping up and that sort of thing, so they could keep at sea all the time. And this bomb fell and gave a big flash of fire, which burnt him and blew him into the sea. The sea's very dirty there, with all other ships that have been sinking and so on. But he saw a paddle steamer, and he swam over to that, and it had a net hanging down, and with his rather burnt hands, he still clambered up and got onto this ship, which was promptly hit by another bomb or series of bombs and sunk with Nobby with it. And he crawled swimming his way back onto the beach, which is a very long, slowly sloping sandy beach. And then he joined another fellow there who had a bottle of Drambuie, and they sat and or lay down there and sipped at this until somebody picked them up. There were people picking them up and picking us up all around the place somehow or other, and getting them off. And so he got home, and he came into this next bed to me, and he recovered, but he would not have been well enough to fit again, because he was sort of down to his bones in his hand, and his nose was an awful job to get fixed up. But his parents had a pub, and I'm not sure whether it was at Ramsgate or not, but it was somewhere down in Kent. And one day they came to see him, and they brought a bottle of brandy. And I don't think they gave it to him, but they gave it to the sister's office and left it there. But somehow, one evening, he got it, and he poured me a little cup of wine. I don't like brandy anyway, but I had to do this, and he had one. But it had a terribly bad effect on me, and I began to pass out with this altogether, and my two doctors appeared and stayed with me, and you know, made a big fuss. I don't think they twigged what was, couldn't believe that I was drunk or something like that. So I kept very quiet, but I never had any more after that. But he and I used to go out. Now, you weren't allowed out at all, but we'd go the opposite way to out, and found that we could get through the back fence and go across a field or two, and there was a pub down there, and if we went in there, somebody would buy us a drink, and we'd have several drinks, and we'd try and play any game that was there. If it darts, he had his hands sort of wrapped up, but he'd have a go at throwing a dart or anything like that. Very, very pleasant, fine man. Thank you, darling. One day, my old battery commander, say, not Cecil Wright, chap named Wilson, came, and Mr. Brearley came, and his wife, Mrs. Brearley, and they took me out. They'd arranged it with the hospital, and I went out with them in old Brearley's car, and they took me to the man who had been our honorary colonel, and he had me to tea. And he was a fairly wealthy man, and in to do with Covent Garden, used to always provide apples at our suppers and dinners and things before the war, and that was very nice and a terrific surprise for me. Went up through his front garden with all roses and so forth, and he came, put his uniform on, and came and opened the door to me, and I recognised him, of course, and he took me in, and we sat down very comfortably, and his maid, or one of the maids, brought us tea, and she was all dressed up in little maid's uniform, and we had tea, cake and whatever, there, and talk for an hour or two, and then they came back and picked me up and took me back to the hospital, and so that was that. So that was nice. The newspaper. I'm still at the hospital and mobile now. And just a bit puffy if I ran, but really getting better. And one day the Queen came to the hospital, and she came round to our ward. I expect she went to all the wards. She was a very busy woman then, and she was very nice, and she came over and specifically spoke to me. I haven't a clue what she said, but we made it. I made it pleasant for her. I made her feel at home, and so it was rather nice. To see her there. And then soon after that, I must have been sent home, and I had to go to our depot, which was at Woolwich, and a pretty horrible place it was to be in. And I was there and started getting sort of marched about, and so on and so forth. And I then had to go in front of a medical officer. Now, in the hospital, I was downgraded. I had to see a medical board, and there were three RAMC colonels, and we didn't talk at all, if any. And I was made D. Which I don't know what D meant, but I'd possibly discharge. But you have to have three doctors to downgrade you, and any one medical officer can upgrade you. So when I got to Woolwich, I was seen, about 200 of us being seen by this one medical officer, and he had our AB64s part one, they were called, and he just saw us in little groups of 14. And we went in there, stood in a line, and he said, "Fit, fit, 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 fit," all the way along. There's one chap there on crutches, the old wooden crutches. He sort of said, "No," but I didn't say anything. I sort of nodded. And sure enough, I was fit. So suddenly, I was A1 again, which is really pretty ridiculous then. And so I could go anywhere then. And so I wrote a note to our regiment and said, "I am A1 at Woolwich and would like very much, if there's a vacancy, to come back to the regiment." So the next thing I got was put on 24-hour guard, in charge of a guard, up at, with quite a few German prisoners of war, who were... I didn't know we had any German prisoners of war, but we did. But they were mostly airmen, and they'd been shot down. So they were all wounded, and in that hospital, it might have been Herbert Hospital, but it was just walking distance from our Woolwich depot to the hospital. And I had quite a lot of men and on the guard. We had to have somebody in each ward, and I was in charge of that. And... You had to write down the names of all the prisoners, and these German names. I was in the middle of writing this up the first night, four copies, no carbons or anything. So I did that, and then a messenger came up. I think it was a sergeant came up, and he said, it was a sergeant came up, and he said, "I've got to relieve you, and you're to report back to the depot at once." By this time, it was about midnight. And so I walked across this dark common and so forth, and went back, and he had to carry on with writing up the guard report. And I said I'd been round and I'd seen all the prisoners, and they were all there. You had to put... sand shoes on, slippers in, so that you didn't make any noise when you went round, not to disturb them, and they were pretty cheeky too. But anyway, that was that. So I said goodbye to that. I only did about half of that 48-hour guard. It was 48 hours, and so that was very nice. And when I got back, they gave me a warrant for Southport to join the regiment again. So I went home and told Mum and said goodbye, and I probably stayed. I didn't worry very much about the time or going straight back or anything like that. Then I made my way up to Southport, and I got there fairly late that sort of following night. And this old Bert met me at the station, at Southport station, and he'd got a little truck and a driver, and they took me back, and I sort of muscled into a room in a private house with a group of other sergeants, and I just had a little corner on the floor, and I sort of just got on with it again. I forget just what I did, but I was promoted very shortly after that to battery sergeant major, because old Jack Housby had been commissioned and I took his place, and it was battery sergeant major. I was very embarrassed about this because there were some who were troop sergeants major who were clearly senior to me, and but I got this rather club job. A battery sergeant major had, I think, three troops then, so you had these people that were under you, as it were, but presently they all got promoted to battery sergeants major. And so anyway, that was all right. We'd been down to this firing camp, I should mention, at in Wales, and that's from there I went to Buckingham Palace. I had a few more days off and went up there with Mum, and Auntie Dole came with me. And it was a nice little exciting day. I think Auntie Dole particularly enjoyed that, going in there and seeing the King. And they had some guards band playing for us very quietly and nicely. And that was that. I just had a... And then I got my medal. And one of our officers was there also getting his medal. Mr. Barrett, I think. He was killed later, I think. He was with his mother too. So it took me about a year, and that took up all through 1942. Then I became a master gunner, and I was sent to the Orkneys, where I was on the island of Flotta, and I had one or two gun sights on one of the other islands. And also, I had, of all the stupid things, another 6-inch naval gun battery at Wick, in the very north of Scotland. And I had to come across the Pentland Firth again and again. And I did sort of master the seasickness. I sang all the time. And Underneath the Arches was my favourite tune. You used to sing that, and you can't actually be sick when you're singing. So I managed that. But then, now that used up 43 pretty well. And then I was posted to Gibraltar. I don't know when I went, whether it was... I wasn't all that long, perhaps a year. I went in 44, and one day I was sent across to Italy, and I had to take some Italian prisoners of war back on my ship. And to my great delight, I was made OC troops, which gave me a rather nice cabin right amidships on this vessel. And of course I lived, I fed in the officers' mess, where the captains and ship's officers were, and a couple of Italian padres and this Italian officer. But I had my own table, and it was looked after very nicely. And we went to Taranto, and then I went up and ran into Bert again at a camp up there. So it's all very funny. Mm-hmm. The name of that port on the south-east corner of Sicily. The Italian lieutenant came to look here. I'll give you a wonderful holiday in Sicily after the war. We've got the wars finishing soon and so forth. If you let me off here so I can get off the ship. I said, well, I don't like to do that because all your men, these other 70 men we've got here from your regiment and so on, will be left without an officer, not in their own country. And they are to take those all to Italy. And I'm afraid that you'll have to stay with them so that you can at least see them probably handed over in your own country, as it were, and then you'll have to make your own way back over to Sicily.